Welcome to the United Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. Thanks for joining us. I want to thank our friends at Dr. Dish. Guys, let me tell you just real quick about Dr. Dish, not just because they're a sponsor, just because they're the real deal. If you want your kids to be better shooting, because we all say shooting is the separator, you need a Dr. Dish. If you think you can't afford it, they have an interest-free one-year payment plan. I actually use that to purchase our Dr. Dish. So reach out to them at Dr. Dish B-Ball on all social media. Hey, coaches, as you know, we have United Basketball Plus, and we have a play bank of plays. So this is for the listener. If you have a quick hitter or really great play that you would like to have on the website, just send it to me at matt@unitedbasketballplus.com. I'll make a graphic, the high school, the city where it's located, your mascot, whatever you want, and I'll put your play on the website. Just email me the video link at matt@unitedbasketballplus.com. Because I know some of the best coaches in the game listen to this podcast, and you run some really good quick hitters and sets, and we'd love to showcase them on the website. Also, if you'd like to join United Basketball Plus, use the code UBPLUS. That's UB as a basketball, the word plus, to get 20% off for an annual membership, which will bring it down to about $44 for a year. We're in the process of putting more speed agility clips on there from Casey Wheel. We just added a deep dive with Ido Singer. We also did a deep dive with Stu Singer, sports psychologist for United Basketball Plus. Really, really great content. Again, guys, thanks for your loyal support of United Basketball and what we're doing here. Now let's get to the podcast. I want to welcome Stu Singer, a sports psychologist. He's worked with the Washington Wizards, the Washington Mystics, and some pro and college teams there. He's an expert in his field. So, Stu, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Now, I'm excited about this topic as someone who's been coaching almost two decades. And what we're going to be discussing is just how to create a performance environment. So Stu, how can we as coaches, those of us who lead teenagers or young adults, establish standards and principles to have an environment where players can thrive and flourish and, you know, be the best they can be, which is what we all want as leaders and coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a really important topic, really important discussion to have. And I think that the way I think that I've seen it evolve is that over the years, and I think you and I have even talked about this, that many of us coach the way we were coached. And then we probably want to add in, I was coached like this, and I'm really a fan of Coach K, so let me read a book that he wrote. And we try, you know, we create something that's based in some experience that we've had and maybe an idol that we have in the coaching field. And, you know, and that turns out to be how we go about our creation of the environment. And nothing wrong with that per se, but I think that over the years we've realized, like, maybe because I had a certain experience does not necessarily mean that that is the experience that's best for the larger group. So, like, because I had a study of one, me, I can't necessarily say that that's the ultimate for a group of 15 to 18 year olds now.
Right.
And so the evolution has been like, well, let's look at some of the, what's the research say, what's the science, you know, say about really how do people flourish and become their best? And what are some things that get in the way of being at their best? And so first and foremost, I think it's really important to know that we have to do that because, you know, as great as, let's say, Coach K is, by the way, I'm actually a North Carolina fan, so it hurts me to say, but he is a great coach. There's no way about it. But saying that, like, some of it is cult of personality. It's like he does well because of what and who he is. So we have to be careful of trying to replicate what a person does rather than what do we know system-wide is effective for human beings. So one of the first things that we can think about is think about the performance environment as an ecosystem. And so if we think about an ecosystem in nature, there's no part of it that's more important or less important. It just all has to be there. And so if somehow you take a portion out of that ecosystem, the whole thing starts to fall apart, right? So we have to think about, well, what are we responsible for as a coach and or coaching staff? At the you know, college and pro level, we have, you know, performance coaches and other things within it. So what does the support staff look like, and what's their role in that ecosystem? And then what is the athlete player responsibility, and what are they responsible for within the environment? And when any one part happens to be off, and by the way, at any time, it could be any part, right? Yeah. I can be the head coach and I'm not in a good space, so I'm the one that's off. Or there's something going on in the performance support staff, or there's something going on within the team environment, or there might just be something going on with one player who can now disrupt the entire program. So one thing that we have to do is look at what does it have to be so that all of us are performing well? And we need to get some level of agreement on that. What's the task at hand that allows you individually to be at your best? And what's the task at hand that allows the group to be at its best? And we should be asking that question, not just once. We shouldn't just create that at the beginning of the year, but we should be really thinking about it intentionally throughout a season.
I want to go back to something you said at the beginning, and you talked about what does the research say, or what does the data say essentially? So again, most of us who coach are just kind of replicas of the coaches that we had before us. And you mentioned that, but what does the research say? Like, how do we know how to get the proper performance environment, regardless if I move from job A to job B or work with, you know, this age group or that age group? I mean, the performance environment is probably pretty standard based on what the data or science says, or your research.
Okay. So let's first start with what, I don't want to say what gets in the way, but I think we need to think about motivation in terms of, like, well, what does research find in terms of motivate? What makes people want to show up and do something, and what's less likely? All right. So let's start with different types of motivation. So the first type of motivation is fear punishment.
Yeah.
All right. So the bottom floor is, if you don't do this, or if you do whatever, you know, whatever we wanted to say don't do, we punish it. All right. The second one, so let's if we think of these as steps going upward, the next step up is reward. So we see what we do want and reward that. All right. However, both of these are extrinsic, right? They're outside of the person. It still requires you, head coach, to either punish me or reward me, okay? The next one up, the next step up, is duty or obligation. So now I'm doing something because I feel like it's the right thing for me to do, all right? Good. Because at this point, we have now shifted into intrinsic, within me, motivation. However, duty, obligation doesn't sound real passionate, right? It doesn't, like, that's, it's good, but it's not necessarily like a passionate place to be. And then the highest form of motivation is love or passion. So if I said to you, I'm going to give you a roster of 15 guys that are, they just absolutely love the sport. They love showing, they love the game. Would you tell me I'm all in?
Yeah, I'd be perfectly happy with that as a high school coach. Absolutely.
Now, if I said to you, I want to give you a roster of 15 guys that are petrified of being punished, or they're fearful of making a mistake, what would you tell me?
Yeah, no, you don't want that. No.
You don't want that, right? Now, what do we typically do, right? We screwed this up. Get on the line. We're running. Give me 20 put, you know, just screaming, you know, calling people out, right? So And I'm not saying, by the way, that that doesn't have it has a moment in time for sure, right? It's a tool that needs to be in the toolbox. But one of the things that we want to be thinking about is, I actually want 15 guys that are showing up and they can't wait to step on the court. Now, some of that's obviously internal to them. Do they really love it? Are they doing it because they want to do it? Or are they doing it because their parents wanted them or their older brother played? So now they're going to follow. Like, there's a lot of different reasons why it might not be there. But one of those things shouldn't necessarily be us. All right. And so that's big picture of like the concepts of motivation. We know these are the four pillars, the four steps of different types of motivation. We're pretty aware of the fact that the research says that intrinsic motivation is the best form of motivation. The reality is, at any one time, we can be in any four of those. I am passionate about my work. I would be lying to say that fear of what if I don't have a job at some point or what have you doesn't some days make me move, okay? Like, so there's always gonna be some bits of all of these, right? But at the end of the day, I know that I'm always gonna be better at my job because I actually care so much that I wanna keep getting better. I wanna read about this. I wanna do more research. I wanna understand what's going on. That's gonna make me better because I know I'm passionate about this work. All right, so now let's get to, well, what's the research say about getting to that top one, that love or passion? All right. And there's a theory called self-determination theory. And this is probably about, I think this probably has about 30 to 40 years of research behind it. And it's still being updated and utilized. I literally just listened to a podcast recently. I don't remember what the podcast was, that had one of the guys that's the founder. There was two guys that did this research, and they are still working active psychologists in the field of motivation. And so they're still working on it, is the bottom line. They're still using. And here's what self-determination theory is. Self-determination theory first is autonomy. Number one, autonomy. We have some choice, okay? So going back to me, when I said about I'm passionate about this, I'm passionate about this because I chose this. Like, I love this field. Now, could I be an auto mechanic? Probably. Like, I think I have the physical skill to do it, and I'm assuming I have the intellectual capability to do it. Would I drive in a car that I worked on? Absolutely not. All right. I don't think I'm particularly good at it, and I'm just not interested enough for me to become great at it. Okay. So, but by choosing something that I love, I'm better at it. Or if I said to you, what's the parts of coaching that you absolutely love to do? You don't have to answer this. And what are the parts that you do because it's the responsibility of the head coach? And I said, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to have you do the parts that you absolutely love. I'm going to assign those other parts to an assistant or somebody else within the organization. I will bet you that you kick ass in the things that you chose because you're like, I chose this, man. I want to be really good at this. Okay. Two is the idea of competency. Not only do I choose it, but I also know I'm pretty good at certain things. Like, these are the areas where I know I'm okay. I can handle this. All right. Three then is what's called relatedness. How does it relate to me? How do I relate to others? Why is what we're doing matter? Okay. Big picture. Why is what we're doing matter? Why should this matter to me? All right. So now let's go back and talk about it through the lens of a team. You as a head coach get to give, not all the time, but sometimes, choice. Guys, we can practice right after school, or we can practice at 8 o'clock. What do you guys want to do? All right. Now, they choose it as a group. They have ownership. When we have ownership, we usually take care of it. right? If I own a car or I rent a car, it's a whole different ball game, right? Like if I own it, I'm taking care of it. It's my investment. The other one, well, I got it for the weekend, you know, whatever, right? And so when people say, I'm going to do this because I chose this, they usually follow through. When I dictate to somebody, you're showing up at this time, they don't have ownership. One of the things that we know as coaches is, and you see it a million quotes, is yes, I want to be the leader of the team. I'm the head coach, but I know that the teams that I've had where they add ownership, where they own their locker room, where they said to guys, this isn't good enough, were the best teams. We got to give them opportunities to own it. So I'm not saying it's a complete democracy where we vote on literally, guys, do you want to run this offense or do you want to? But if you have opportunities to say, hey, what do you guys want? How do you want to do this? And you're cool with it, then let's give them those opportunities. Okay. The 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock choice, like I said, is a great example of saying, like, especially if you don't care, let's say if you're like, it doesn't matter to me. Okay. All you really want is a good practice, right? As a head coach, you just want a good focused practice. So you give them two choices, each of them you're okay with, right? I don't care which one it is, but you let them choose. It creates that feeling of ownership. The other thing that happens when we pick competency, one of the things is understanding where people are already decent. Okay. So if you have somebody that you want to turn into a post, but they've really only ever played on the wing or vice versa, you want to put them out on the wing and they've only played. You may have to do that. Sometimes we don't have a choice, right? It's the roster we have. We have to do that. But if I can ask people, where are they most competent? Like where now I can build off of their competency. But if they don't feel competent and now I'm asking them to be two or three steps above where they actually are at this moment, there's actually nothing to build off of because you got to find where they, whatever the skill is that they actually had, and you got to go meet that and then build. So if you're putting somebody in a place where they're not particularly competent, again, it's not a democracy. They don't get to vote every single time, but the more opportunity they have, the better.
Right. That's very good. So many good things you said there to convict me on some things I do. So how, try to word this. Let's say you have two or three players that just aren't quite there. You know, like you would say the team is there. We got the majority, the high majority, but you've got these two or three guys or gals just having a hard time buying into what you're trying to do. Because, you know, what I've learned is so many kids I get are so used to the punishment reward question or environment.
Yeah.
That they might struggle for a while in the more democratic, you want me to play for the love of the game, you're going to give me choices. How do you work with that player who's so used to the old way? And now you get them at 17 and like, I don't mind punishment reward system. Actually, you may thrive, you know, they may think that's what they thrive on.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and let me just say this. I should have said that at the beginning. It's not the end of the world, right? Like we do sometimes. Well, no. If we want somebody to move fast, the absolute best way to have somebody move fast is fear or punishment. Like that's where people are going, you know, they're going to move, right? So it's not inherently bad. It's a question of is it overall our best way? Right. So if you do have that, I think you can utilize it. But I would meet with those players and in a weird way, you segued me to the third step, which is relatedness. Like, why are you here? What do you want? And if this is what you want, I'm good with it. But this is what we know. We know that people are better when they show up with this kind of expansive, where can I go and what can I do, rather than restrictive, I don't want to screw up. All right.
Just go ahead. I'll interrupt you, but it reminds me, I'll give an end of year survey to my players. And a couple of years ago, in the survey, what would you change with the team? What you don't. Yep. And some of the, one of the players or a couple players put, you know, we need more punishment. And I was thinking, well, they were a pretty easy group to coach. I mean, I didn't really dive into it as much as I should have in hindsight, but like, you mean you want the whole team running if the guy's 90 seconds late? Do you want the guy has a shirt untucked? It was just kind of a unique answer to like, we need more punishment. And I felt that's a way of them saying like, hey, in their minds, we weren't that disciplined. It was a unique answer, you know, to the question.
No, I love it because we know that especially young people, even if they fight against it to a certain level, they do want to know where the boundary lines are. Mm-hmm. They thrive when they know where the boundary lines. What I hear maybe is a little bit different in that. And I wonder if what they say is we believe we could have had even higher demand. So not so much do we want more punishment, but could the demand been higher? Right. Could we have pushed ourselves? Could you have set a higher demand? And so we want that. So now let's just keep using, like, this is where a theoretical framework is effective. To me, that's in autonomy. What do you guys want? So if we did this prior to the season,
right?
What is the demand? What's the expectation? Now, because that's another part of this whole thing. When we're creating the environment, it should be a shared environment. What is the expectation? And let's break it down to, and what do the behaviors look like? So I want to know what a high demand environment means to you, this team this year, not 5 years ago, not 5 years from now, but 2022, what do you guys want? This is the expectation that you're saying you want. This is what we're saying as a coaching staff. We're all in this together, by the way, because that's ecosystem, right? We're all in it together. And once we establish these shared expectations, now we decide on what do those behaviors look like. So like what you said, 90 seconds late could be something that nobody cares at all about, right? Come on, coach. Don't bench them for our big game tomorrow night for being 90 seconds late. Or it could be absolutely, because that's a championship team, never shows up late. So, but you don't know that until the conversation happens. What does it mean for them? To me, that's ownership, because now they're going to hold each other to that because they already discussed it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. So have these conversations early, and the standards should be known to the players.
100%.
We have a standard, and obviously you can't go over every micro incident in a season, but you could talk about the importance of being on time for the bus or pregame meals and film and, you know, all these types of things you address. So the standard is there. So when a situation arises, it may be unique to that situation, but we know what's going to be like. Whereas you're not sitting John for being 5 minutes late, and then Billy starts and he's 5 minutes late because he's the better player. The standard is the same across the board, regardless of your talent level.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Correct. And here's a reminder on this too. Is that, again, this should be like a living, breathing thing that we do. We don't do this exercise at the beginning of the year and then we move on. It's part of us. It's who we are. you probably will appreciate this, but if you go into the majority of Division I, let's say, that have the resources, locker rooms, there will probably be some version of our standards, what it means to play at, you know, XYZ university. Mm-hmm. And I will all but bet you majority, not everywhere, if they said, okay, what are the 10 standards that we have? Hardly any could read them off because they're on the wall. They see them every day.
Right.
But we don't talk about, right? We don't. So like at that point, it's awesome. They're nice words. I bet you if you read them, you'd be like, those are great standards. You know, 100%. The problem is they got to be living and breathing. They got to be part of who we are. We have to really discuss it. We have to say, did this live up to it or did it not live up to it?
Yeah.
And that's how we're like, that's a real environment at that point. Those aren't words on a wall. It's a real environment.
Yeah. And I think that we as coaches can really trim it down. Instead of having 15 mantras and all this stuff, like it could be, do your job. It could be team first. Like, I don't think we need all these cliche coaching when we can summarize it in just a simple statement.
Not only don't we need, it's way more effective, right? There's two things. Cognitive load, which means how much can we take? I don't know if you've ever heard this, but if you have 10 things, you have 0 things, you know, like in a timeout.
Right.
Don't give them 10 different things. You got nothing in them at that point. Effective timeout will probably be 1 or 2 points. And after that, they're not hearing you. They can't possibly take it all in and then go out and do for 5 different variables that could happen in this moment. Right. So one of them is cognitive load. The other one is working memory. Working memory is just like, what do I need to do in this moment? And then it goes away and the next moment happens. And that's like those two things are 100% what you're saying. Don't give me 10 things. Don't give me 15. They sound good. They're great.
Right.
But in the moment, I can't remember that. What are we about? Give me one phrase. Give me one sentence.
Right. And usually, not to stay on the quote thing long, usually it's the same thing said 10 different ways. I mean, it's the same philosophy, but just, you know, have your little t-shirt slogan. That's fine. But you're right. If you don't talk about it, if you don't address it daily, then what's the point? You know, there's no point. It's just words on a wall.
Yeah, 100%. And from somebody that has a lot of conversation with both coaches and then a lot of players over the years and all sorts of different levels, different sports, different genders, you know, whatever. They say, I don't know. Like, I mean, they're basically, I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know what those things are. I don't really think of those things, you know, mid-season when whatever. Like, and so just from a pure, like, part of this is research. The other is just anecdotal from somebody that's doing it day in and day out and talking to players. They don't know it. You know, that it's not, unless it's part of what we do daily, they don't know. Now, I have worked with some programs and some teams that absolutely know what they're about. And because of exactly what you said, it's very clear. It's what we're about. It's part of our fiber. We talk about, we discuss it. We ask, did we live up to it? And if we didn't, why not? We have those conversations.
Okay. So Stu, you've covered a lot of good things the last 30 minutes and a lot of theory. And as an educator, I'm inundated with that. Now, how do we put this into practice? What are some ways that the guy listening, whether they're coaching middle school girls or a Division I coach, how can we put this in into practice for our players and our staff?
So, correct, man. Like at the end of the day, nothing matters unless we can apply it, right? So biggest picture is, how do we make this work in the real world? All right. So as you know, we started talking about this and we talked about that preseason, you know, meeting. And I would say first and foremost, we have to start there, but I would go, there's a step before that, which is if you have a staff, let's meet as a staff and let's talk about the things that we really believe are really important to us. Maybe some things that happened the prior year that we think either allowed us to be successful or things that we feel like got in the way. Let's talk about potentially some things that when we reflect, we wish we would have done better or differently. What was my impact last year? And so let's start there first, because I do think that there's a piece of this that has to be coach staff directed, meaning these are things that we think are really, really important. Okay. Then we bring this conversation to the full group and we frame it in this idea that we're all in this together. The idea should never be, we're always playing against the other team. We should never be playing against the other team and us, right? Like that doesn't make any sense. It's hard enough to beat the other team. Why would we be doing something against? So we're in this together first. Now, these are some things that we feel as a coaching staff are really, really important. We discuss these things. We feel that they're important. Want to get your feedback, want to get your thoughts, and we want to get how you see these things and what else that you guys, because they're also going to have the things from the year before, because you're always going to have some returners. And what do you guys think really was good for us? What do you think some things are that we need to get better at? And let's have this discussion. All right. So that's the beginning of the application of this. And let's then turn it into eventually, like we talked about, what are the actions? So that might look like we're always ready on time. We're there on time. If we have an hour and a half, 2 hour practice, the expectation is once we step inside the line so that we're focused, committed, we're going to work hard. And once we step outside the lines, man, we can joke around and have fun again and be loose. But in here, this is, you know, we have a job to do and we're going to do that work while we're in there, whatever it might be. But you get the actions to be committed to. Then we make sure that we're discussing these things. Like, how do we do this week? You know, maybe after a game, win or loss, we can talk about, hey, how are we good or bad based on how close were we to the actions that we said we were going to agree on? Because now we're connecting potentially a little bit of outcome to how close were we to the actions and behaviors that we believe create success. We agreed to this, okay? Because that's all we're trying to do is we're trying to be committed to the actions and behaviors that we believe create success. And so we're going to do that. Now, one of the things that we didn't talk about is trust and how big trust is in all of this. So let me also give you a little bit on trust real quick. Trust is created through, so if you look at it as a formula, trust equals competency, consistency, care, and then agenda, like player first agenda. So for you as a head coach, you get to prove competency, like I know my stuff, I've been doing this for a while. Consistency, how do you show up? How do you interact? Okay, who's this guy? You could be a player kind of coach. You could be a much more firm, like, you know, it's my way or the highway. It doesn't matter. Be consistent. Care about the individuals. Show them, talk to them in ways that prove your care. Not because you actually are just trying to check something off, but because you actually do care. And then agenda, what's your agenda? If the agenda is so that you get Coach of the Year award or you get a trophy that you've never got before, I don't know if that's the best agenda. The agenda should always kind of be hovering around how do they get what they need in their life. And if you can do that pretty consistently, now you've created trust. Now these things that we discuss really matter because they're real. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. I'm writing this down. I think that's the agenda is what we all struggle with. I mean,
go ahead.
Because we want to, for them to reach their full potential as a coach, we also want this to reflect in wins on the win-loss record.
Sure.
Or the district wins or whatever, if you're a championship level team. So I think that sometimes the agenda can be lost. You're like, all right, this is all about winning the district championship for the first time in 20 years. We've got the team to do it. a kid quits, a kid goes down to ACL, your team, and you're like, oh, we can't reach that goal now. And sometimes you feel like the season's a wash because obviously we're hired or fired based on, goes back to competency, you know, and our ego comes into play there. Does that make sense what I'm saying there?
Sometimes we can, and
the players as well, you know, hey guys, would you rather score 20 points and lose or have 11 points and 4 assists and win? And the player, and a lot of players are like, I don't know, 20 points would be pretty cool. So I think we as humans just struggle with what is the agenda and keeping it team first.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm the only adult who feels that way.
Say that again.
So maybe I'm the only adult who struggles with that.
I don't think so. I think, to me, and in particular, the sport that we're discussing, I think, is one of the most challenging around personal accomplishment and team accomplishment, not because within itself, it's the same concept. You have to score more points than another team, but one player in basketball is so, it's so like big, you know, if you have one incredible player, you know, but like football, you could have one incredible player, but he might not play defense. So like you still need a good defense. You still need a good special teams. Basketball, there's one or two really influential players can be. And so, and it's magnified and they know it. And there's a lot of other variables that can go into that as well. Here's what I would say about that. It's hard to ever get our own personal wants and needs out of something. Okay, like it's hard to separate that. I'd be lying to say I love what I do and I'm focused, very focused on knowing that for the most part, all of the things that I need professionally come from me being able to help others. If I do good work at helping others, I will get recognized. I will get new contracts. I'll get new clients by doing good work with the people or groups that I have. So typically my focus is just that. I know that I just want to do great work for the people in front of me. And when that happens, it just, the other stuff seems to follow. I would say the same to you. And I would say the same to players. And I would also say the opposite. When I get too caught up in like, man, I might lose this contract over here. And now I start thinking about money and thinking about that. I actually become worse because I'm focused on something that's a little bit out of my control. And every single time I get into that space, I recalibrate by like, nope, just do good work right here. And it's always worked for you to this point. It should work moving forward. But it would be a lie to say that we ever completely lose, I don't think, that ego part of it. And I'm not so sure that in competitive sports that we don't need at least a little dose of that ego that does say, I want to be good. I want to have this impact on this group.
Well, it's like the girl or boy who sits the bench a lot. We want them to want playing time. We want them to work hard to want playing time. Yes. And maybe we'll get there. We don't want them to just be complacent, like, all right, well, I'm just not going to play. And we want the guy who's on the floor to be like, oh, no, you're not going to take my minutes. And they're like, no, I want to take your. So you need this, like, this rub of your ego on my ego, but somehow keeping it in check for the overall betterment of the environment.
I completely agree. I love when somebody gets mad because there's somebody on the bench that's not happy in their role and the coach is like mad at them. Well, I don't want a bunch of kids on the bench that don't want to play. Like, first of all, that's why we sign up. We want to play. Two is, I don't, like you said, I don't want them complacent. Like, because if they're complacent, then they won't come to practice and push the people that are in front of them, right? Saying that, I do think that there's way, you know, like, but game day, you know, you can't sit and pout on the bench. You got to be great. You got to bring energy. Like, there are things that we can look for behavior acting wise that say like, I hear you. I hear that you're not happy about it. But in this moment, this is what we need from you and you can't take energy away. And these are fine at 15 years old. That's a big ask, actually. It's not a small ask. Yeah.
And that's why it goes back to what we talked about a little while ago, talking about like you set the standard, you have these conversations early. Because if you pull your whole team aside, if you talk about this as a group and individually, Well, there's eight guys who get a lot of playing time and six guys or girls who get minimal playing time. So you have to address, okay, how's our decor on the bench? How do we handle this? How do we deal with the bad call or whatever? So I think you're right. We address these issues. We set the standard. And then we also, you know, do our best to reward positive. Not that we want to get back into the reward a little bit, but if a guy's a coach.
Yeah, we acknowledge it, right? Yeah. I mean, well, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think positive, acknowledgement is a massive, I do it 100%. When I'm coaching, I'm certainly going to notice good behavior. I'd rather notice the behavior that I want rather than just always harp on the behavior that I don't. Now let me give a real life example to what you asked about using, like I said, I'm a way back when Dean Smith fan, North Carolina fan. Okay. This year's North Carolina team, super average at best. This was not a particularly good, and all of a sudden they're playing in Durham, Coach K's last game at home. And I'm like, oh God, this could get ugly because the game in Chapel Hill was ugly. So I'm like, and then they come and they play with passion and they win this game. I'm like, I never would have pictured this team winning that game. Okay. Then get an 8 seed, probably about right. And now this team makes it to the Final Four. And my point to that whole thing is going back to the question that you asked, what if we set these goals at the beginning of the year that we thought we were going to do? I'm not so sure that we actually know one way or another that we're not going to reach or we are going to reach. Like the goal needs to be, if we stick to these standards that we talked about, I don't actually know what the outcome's going to be. But what I do know is when we stick to these standards, that's us at our best. And that's where standards week by week, because the other thing that I teach a lot of is staying present. So kid goes down in week one, that's a big time player for us. Of course, it's going to hurt. But I actually don't know what the future holds. So he goes down and that's a bummer. She goes down. That's a big blow to us. But what are our standards? Our standards are not going to change because that player isn't playing now. And let's see what happens. Because you don't know and I don't know.
Right. No, I think that, you know, you can pick up a win or two based on your culture and your standards and sticking together through tough times. And I would say, you know, how you communicate this with teenagers, you know, is unique because it's different when you're working with 21 and 22. Because if you're playing sports at 22, you're high level, whether you're on a college team or a pro team. So high school, this may be the last time they ever play a competitive sport, right? Yeah. And they know this.
Yeah.
But I think you know, we're going to go farther together than we will individually.
Yes.
You know, so as you can communicate that and build that, this performance environment, you know.
And can I say one other application piece that's really important in what you just said, which is it's okay to say, hey, this is really hard what I'm saying to you right now. I don't expect you to be perfect at this. I expect that there's going to be these moments where your ego or my ego or whatever gets in the way. I think we mess up sometimes when we act like this is easy, like team first. Team first isn't easy. It's not natural. We are designed to want to take care of us. That's like our brain says, keep this guy alive. It doesn't naturally say, do all these other things. So it's actually the not natural, instinctual system that we have in place. So by just acknowledging, we're going to screw this up. We're going to have moments where ego gets the best of us. I don't want it, but I also know that that's going to happen. But what I want to do is get better at it. And I think that freedom and that being real with young people, being real with them is so helpful because it creates conversation and communication as well.
Yeah, I think you're the first person in 20 years of talking to people and doing clinics and ADs and all that who've ever said, yeah, the whole team first is not easy, because it's not. Because every day I wake up and I'm like, how can I make Matt's life easier? How can I make Matt's? And that's how we're wired. We're innately somewhat selfish. And so then I'm saying, hey, 15 teenage boys or teenage girls, some of you aren't going to play. Some of you aren't going to play in key moments for a variety of reasons. Maybe you're 5'6" and he's 6'7".
Yeah.
But it's still really hard for you to sit there and ride the bench. And it's okay that it's hard.
Yes.
And it's okay that it's a struggle. And it's okay that your parents are mad about it.
Yep.
Like, it's okay.
And think about this. Don't you sometimes fail at like not putting everything, like in theory, your team is your whole teaching staff and your school building, right? There are times where you're like, no, I don't, I need this for me. This is going to help my family. This is going to be what works for, like, we fail. And I'm not even saying you actually fail. I think it's relatively normal, but I think just by like being real that this is hard, we're not going to be perfect at it, but it is important and it does matter. And you will notice the moments where you get over yourself a little bit and you do this, and it will be a better experience. But in the times that it's hard, you're normal.
Well, and then I think you talk about, and we talk about, here's how to handle those negative emotions. Here's how to handle the hard. Yes. Here's what's going to work and what's not going to work, whether it's in basketball or your job one day, or with your wife or with whoever. Like, I know that we always want to use examples with kids about these lifelong lessons. Yep. A lot of times they don't recognize them until they're later on down the road. Like, yep, they're so in the moment, it's hard for them to think about 10 years away. But I think we want to talk about, like, you know, you are on the bench and you want to act this way or whatever reason. Here's how we should handle it. And this aligns with our standard.
I'm going to give you an example that is a basketball example, but I think it applies to exactly what you're saying. I have had over the years times where there's a battle going on. A player that plays more as a wing player who the coaches are like, they're not running the floor hard enough. They should be running their wing hard. And they get crap because they show it in film. You got to run that harder. I talk to the player. The player's like, Stu, it doesn't matter because my point guard won't pass the ball forward because they're always scared about turning the ball over. So why should I run hard? They don't pass me the ball. And here's my answer. Because if you do what you're supposed to do, now it becomes glaring that they're not doing their part. But right now, you are the one that looks like, because you're not doing this, you're the issue.
Yeah.
So it does matter for you to do that.
That's really good. Like, that just kind of like a light bulb went off.
Exactly. Right. Now it's the same thing on the bench. If I say, do I understand why you are miserable sitting on the bench? Yes, I do. I'm not even going to fight with you. You sit and pout and have a bad attitude, you're never going to get into the game. So I'm not telling you I don't understand what's making you upset, but I am telling you, if your action meets the standard, there's more likelihood that you get what you want. And that's, to me, how we begin to frame some of this stuff. It's not that I don't understand. It's not that I think you're a bad person because you're upset because you want to play. I'm trying to tell you what puts you in position. And I can't guarantee that you'll even still get it, but I can tell you that this behavior is worse than this one.
Yeah, if I look down the bench and you're pouting and the guy next to you's going crazy, cheering and clapping, it's a no-brainer who I'm going to put in, even if he's less talented.
Correct.
You know, 100%.
It's just real.
Yeah. Well, that was great. Any last little tidbits? We've covered a ton of information in the last hour. Anything you want to add to the coaches listening?
This conversation is it's an important one. It's a challenging one. It's a patient one. We could dive into any one of these things for an hour by themselves, probably. What I would say is, I'm always interested in trying to support coaches that are interested in creating truly great environments that accept the idea that we're going to push and we're going to set high standards and expectations are high. And we're going to do our part to make sure that what we create allows you the best opportunity to reach those things. So if there's coaches that are interested, I'm always happy to field a question. I do work individually with some coaches across the country that are interested in this. So I'm always happy to think about how we can, you know, to do that.
And just mention how coaches can connect with you, whether social media or website, mention that.
Yeah. Best places probably to reach me are either of my social media. So at Twitter, at Well Performance Coach, on Instagram, I'm Well Performance Coach, and you can kind of direct message me at either one of those, or I think both of them link to my website, which you can email me as well. But those are probably the easiest ways to reach.
All right. Well, again, every time I talk to you, I leave thinking there's a lot of things I need to change. You challenge me. It's not a bad thing. You challenge me 20 years in, like I can get better. We can make this environment better. We can make it better. So when my players leave, I've set the environment to have the best performance and meet their potential as a player, as a person. And, you know, hopefully if you get 15 people doing that, then good things happen.
Exactly. And the other cool part of what you said is I agree with you. It should be something where we say, what more do I have to learn? I really don't want to ever think this field that I'm in, that I know it all, because that would be so boring and it would be so limiting. I want to believe that there's always more for me to get better at and to learn. And I do believe that. And because of it, it keeps me fascinated and it keeps me, I hope, moving in a positive direction in terms of getting better. So I think it's a great way to look at our work is we shouldn't think we know it all. That would be super boring, I think.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you. Maybe we can do this again later in 2022.
I'd love to. Absolutely.
Thanks, Stu.
See you, Matt.